Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Baltimore County Informer. I'm your host, Adam Reuter. Today, I'm chatting with Lori, our friend, RN, who is running for United States Senate. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Adam, for having me on.
Yep. Thank you for coming on. So you are a registered nurse. You've been working within the healthcare industry for how many years now?
27 years now.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Thank you. I have the greatest respect for people who work in the medical profession.
Thank you so much.
So I'm glad you're running, especially after the past 4 years we've been dealing with issues, which we'll get to later in the show.
Okay.
So you are hailing out of Oakland, Garrett County area.
That is correct.
But you actually have a connection to Baltimore County, which I appreciate. You actually... I don't know if, were you born in Baltimore County?
Yes, I was born in Baltimore County. I lived in Dundalk. I grew up in Dundalk until my early teenage years before my parents moved me to Garrett County.
Okay, so that's how you got out there.
Yes, that's how I got out there. I did ultimately return to Baltimore briefly in my 20s and worked there for a while, but... You know, returned to the Garrett County area to get my nursing license and live here.
So I appreciate a Dundalkian running
for, Dundalkian.
running for such a big, you know, seat, political seat.
Thank you so much.
So I want to keep this interview as brief as I can. So let's get right into the issues, if you don't mind.
Great.
And we'll talk a little bit more about your background later if there's time left.
Okay.
Right now... Going based off of, we chatted before the interview, and also I checked out your website. You are very interested in the border security issues. So can you please elaborate on that?
Well, I think, you know, we are all up and aware of what's going on with the border and how millions of people have crossed through the border illegally under Biden's administration. And yes, I do say illegally because it is illegal for them to come in without applying for asylum, as many other immigrants have. You know, we've had lots of family that has immigrated here, but they have applied. They were vetted. I mean, and some of them, it took, you know, years to get this. And this is wrong for those people. It's a slap in the face to the people who have applied legally and come through. You know, we know that the border crisis is a bad issue and is a serious multi-level threat. We have the criminals and the cartel and all that we're dealing with, the human trafficking and the violent crimes that have happened, like to Laken Riley. And I say, yes, say her name, Laken Riley. And the, you know, the resolution for that is to just close the border. We need to close the border. We need to secure it by enforcing our existing laws, the remain in Mexico for the Mexicans that have come, and finish the wall, you know, finish the wall. And I'm not saying that people cannot come to the United States. You know, they should. We welcome that. You know, we are America's melting pot, but they need to do it legally. They need to be vetted so that we make sure that we are safe, you know. And this was all done with the stroke of a pen to undo Trump's policies, but, you know, it can be done again. You know, we've done it before, we can do it again, and we just have to enact the executive order.
Yeah, and what are your thoughts on visa overstays and also H-1B visas? That, to me, is an issue, I think, that hasn't really been talked about again. You know, that's something that was addressed during the Trump administration, but it's not talked about anymore.
You know, I think with what we have going on with the crisis, it is so intense with what we're dealing with. Everything has to be gone back through and looked at, people's visas, you know, and how long they've been here and why they are here and if they need to be here and why they should be here. People who are here who have come, like I said, illegally, I believe, need to go back through the door and come in and apply. Now, prior to that, you know, the people that were here who are applying and trying to seek asylum here, you know, that all needs to be looked at. Of course, they should have top priority. You know, they've already been in the system. They've already done this. So
you brought up the laws. I believe there's already laws on the books regarding these different, you know, the way that these different issues should be handled. And for whatever reason, they're not being, it's not being done by the book. And it's also from an international law perspective, I believe people who are seeking asylum are supposed to go to the next country over. Is that, do you know anything about that?
The next country over, I with where we, they are now with the border, we have so many here. I don't even know how, I mean, they could, we can tell them they can all go to the next country because there's so many people here. I'm sure they're not going to go over to the next country. I'm sure they're not going to go back over to Mexico. I'm sure Mexico border would probably shoot them, you know, the drug cartels, you know, I can tell you that that's not going to happen right now and under this presidency. So
yeah, that's correct. Right. Regardless of what the actual laws are, the policies, the executive orders are overriding that, unfortunately.
Right. Our, you know, we can see that, you know, ICE is having that whole issue. You know, we don't need to send more money to the border or more. They just need to be able to enact and enforce the laws that we already have in effect.
Yep.
And so.
So the other big issue on your website is obviously something that people are dealing with on a daily basis. I recently read that the amount of people who are getting their automobiles repossessed, the people who are delinquent on credit card payments are, I don't know if they're at record highs, but the rate is going up. A lot of the COVID policies, the lockdown era policies that were in place that were, you know, they did a moratorium or, you know, a delay in people having to pay like student loans, that went away in October and November. So would you like to address the biggest issue, I think, for everybody, no matter what their party is, the economy and inflation?
Yes. Absolutely. You know, when we are starting to feel all that now, you know, interest rates are going up. People have had to become more dependent on their credit cards. They've had to dip into their savings or deplete their savings and retirement because of the ridiculous spendings that we've had going on. And everybody's feeling it in their pocketbook. You know, to say that you're not, you must be pretty wealthy. Or you must be an immigrant, you know, because we as the people, when we go to the grocery store, can feel the effects. And they say, you know, this has gone up by 10%, 20%. And I've seen things that have almost tripled in price. You know, we see it with eggs and we've seen it with milk and, you know, just the general necessities. Our gas prices have gone up. If inflation is, you know, really affecting the American lives, because people can't make ends meet. They just cannot make ends meet. And I do know that increasing the money supply faster than the percentage of economic growth causes inflation. The solution is to balance the budget and the frivolous spending and stop this dramatic increasing of the money supply.
Yeah, and let's not forget what started, you know, the rapid acceleration of this. Number one, a lot of people forgot that this or didn't even know this happened. I didn't know for about 2 years, actually. Back in March of 2020, when the lockdown era began, the stock market busted. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And the government bailed out the stock market.
Yes, they did. And it's always the elite that they are bailing out, you know, so they stand behind and get behind their own agendas. But what about the everyday American people? What about people like you and I and everyone else who desperately are trying to go to work to make a living, to make ends meet?
Yeah, I mean, it really that's what began, you know, the rapid inflation and then all the expenditures on everything to do with COVID-19, which, look, we can debate whether that was necessary or not. I have my own personal feelings. What matters ultimately is the expenditures were made and they didn't cut back on expenditures after the public health emergency era was over with. And unfortunately, that, and that's just going to keep piling on to people. I mean, inflation is not stopping. And they said, well, it's, now it's only down to 3%. Well, 3% is still 3%. That's a tax. It's a tax on people. It's a hidden, not, it's not really a hidden tax. People fortunately know about it now because it's really affecting, like you said, the grocery stores, the gas prices, car insurance is up. Homeowners insurance, I believe, is up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. How many people, I'm sure they have seen, because it affected me as well, that their automobile insurance had gone, mine went up over $100. I can remember calling in and saying, why is this happening? I haven't put in a claim, you know, and.
Right. That happened. That actually happened to me. $105 a month. Yeah. I haven't had any accidents. My car hasn't been stolen. I have, like you said, I haven't put any claims in.
Right. And, you know, the other things that are affecting it is the federal government with their overspending. You know, they just passed another bill again with those ridiculous, frivolous spendings, you know, like, you know, bracelets on cows and an oyster shell.
What?
Oh yes, yes. You know, it's a bill. They always have these ridiculous amounts of where they go to. I mean, I don't remember the name of the bill, but it's another thing of showing how they don't pay attention to what is being presented before them. They're not reading through, and it's like if we don't get this bill passed, you know, the government's going to shut down. Which means they won't get to collect their paycheck. So they don't bother to read what is in the bill, and then they pass the bill. You know, it's an overspending of ridiculous money, and they call them the pork barrel policies, and that's exactly what they are. You know, granting these funds, and that's why I think there should be the federal go along with the Federal Reserve Act that Rand Paul is trying to put into effect. It's an in-depth audit of government accountability,
you know,
and I think that they should do. I think they should do the zero-based budgeting. You know, the zero-based budgeting means, you know, that every year they go back to a zero base. They don't just carry it over from the next year and saying, well, this is what we spent last year. This is what we're going to spend this year. No, it's a cost justification. And it proved whether or not, you know, if they need it, not if it was approved in the previous cycle. You know, it helps to identify unnecessary expenses to ensure cost control.
Right. This I'll just say this to any federal workers that are out there. This is not the 1980s or 90s anymore, where, you know, everybody's doing well financially, or not everybody, but we'll just say the majority of people. Times are getting tough. Like, we are, if they're not getting tough, they are tough.
They are.
If things do not change at the federal level, I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I know that people are going to, they're already cutting back on different things that they can. I know a lot of people canceled like life insurance policies, and people are cutting Netflix and Disney Plus and, you know, things like that. They're cutting out all the luxuries, which, by the way, has trickle down effects for people who are working in those luxury industries. I'm one of them, by the way. But this can't sustain itself forever. You know, eventually you're going to not be able to cut back on things like medical expenses.
And people really are. And that's really sad, because they are like, do I pay my electric bill or do I buy my medication? And no American citizen should have to try to determine whether or not they need to decide whether or not to, you know, pay for their electric or get their medication. You know, they should be able to do both.
I actually was speaking to an elderly man about this the other day that had to do that. And I said, I don't mean to sound ridiculous or whatever the word may be, but this is elder abuse. And like, inflation to me is elder abuse.
It is, because, you know, we should be taking care of the American people. We really should be. And they're not, you know, we're falling by the wayside. And, you know, medical is huge. People can't afford their insurance. They can't afford their deductibles. They can't afford their medications.
Yeah, it's awful. And before things get even worse, it needs to be addressed quickly. This should be like the financial equivalent of COVID, you know?
Right.
And I'm not seeing the emergency reaction. I'm not saying like go crazy and, you know, start cutting every expense you can. But like I don't. You said Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Has a proposed bill or.
Yes, it's the Federal Reserve Transparency Act, where it has the federal government to show an accountability for their expenses. And it's one of the bills that I believe that he is working on. But yes, the medical issues with regarding to insurance and prescriptions and things should be brought to the forefront and addressed, you know, immediately, because it is important. You know, our health is our issue with ourselves. You know, we have to be healthy in order to continue and feel well in society. So
absolutely. It's, you know, I've been dealing with some health issues myself, and man, you can't work. You can't, you know, or
you can't cut corners on your medical.
No, you can't. And luckily I haven't had to, but you know, for people that can't afford to get things addressed properly, man, I want to hug them and make everything better, you know, but that's not gonna do anything, you know.
But that was one of the big key things that made this non-political nurse jump into the political arena was COVID. That was my whole reasoning to run for Senate, was during the COVID lockdowns. Because of the mandates through Larry Hogan, almost losing my job. You know, they mandated the vaccine instead of, you know, that is infringing upon our medical freedoms. You know, that is something that should be addressed between a doctor and the patient, not the government and agencies. And I didn't feel comfortable taking the vaccine. I had reasons why. And I had to fight that fight. It was a difficult fight, but I won that fight, and I'm very thankful that I did. And I'm not saying that I am anti-vax, but it was not a one-size-fits-all for everyone. There are always, always extenuating circumstances, especially in the medical field. And
yes, and what I love is that so this is actually your second time running for office. You ran in 2022.
Yes.
And what's great is Larry Hogan became your political opponent, you know, after you were already in the race, right?
Yes. This time around, yes, Larry Hogan jumped in the race. The very last day that you could file to run for U.S. Senate, he did, I believe, on the last day at 4 o'clock. Yes, he has.
Yeah. And I would you know, Larry is a guy that got on a microphone in front of, what, half dozen news cameras and used the word safe and effective in regards to the COVID-19 vaccination. Whenever I say vaccines, I'm putting it in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
I looked into what these actually were back in 2020 when they were first being deployed at the end of at the beginning of December 2020. And I learned that, number one, these vaccine companies carried zero legal liability in the case of something wrong going on.
Absolutely. They want you to sign a waiver that you will not hold them accountable should something happen to you. And, you know, we are seeing things happen to people that
isn't normal.
Vaccines or the COVID has affected. I see this in my own family. One of my own family members has been affected by this. We don't know the long-term effects yet of this. Like I said, this was not a one-size-fits-all. I am not saying that I was completely anti-vax against this, but you should be able to decide whether or not you want to take the vaccine. It's a medical freedom. It's your body to decide.
Right.
You know, whether you think, you know, whether you want to take the risk or not.
And I might add that all the risk potential risks were not fully disclosed to people. And I think were nurses and doctors like among the first people that were getting them back in early 2021?
I believe they were offered first to the nurses and the doctors. Many of them did not take the vaccine, you know, at first. Other people, they were given out to other people. Doctors and nurses did get them first, offered first, because, you know, they were on the front lines of COVID.
Right.
And as it should be. But you still should have the decision to make whether or not you want to accept or decline the vaccination.
Especially one that was authorized under emergency use status, especially one that is using technology that was never released upon millions and millions of people in prior years, that being mRNA.
Right.
And come to find out, and I really, really wish I would have spent, you know, instead of a few hours, I wish I would have spent all day looking into this, because I found an article back in 2022 that there had already been studies done about mRNA, and they knew back in, I have this article and I'll send it to you. In 2018, they found that mRNA can cause blood clotting and autoimmune issues. And this was known back then.
One of the reasons I didn't take the vaccine is because I have an autoimmune issue and I was in the middle of a flare at the time.
So it may have made it worse for you.
I tell people now, I never understood. I have Crohn's disease. I was not on a biologic or anything at that time. And I was in the middle of a flare, but I can't prove this, but I actually believe that the Crohn's actually prevented me or helped me from not, I never got COVID then. And I think it was because my body, you know, as an autoimmune disorder, kind of attacks your own body.
Right.
And I believe that when it came in contact with COVID, because I was around so many people with COVID, and then everyone in my family got COVID, and I was the only one who did not. And I believe that my Crohn's disease actually might have kept me safe from that. You know,
And so these people were in the same house as you?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were. No, I did not. I did not. Everyone was home at Christmas, and all six of them got COVID, and I was the only one that did not.
Well, there you go. And I mean, that alone should be reason enough to not get an experimental injection put into your body. If
when you get, you know, I believe, you know, it's a virus, and when you get, like, when you know people know this, when you get chicken pox, you're exposed to that and you build up the antibodies to it, and then you're in your system and you don't get chicken pox again. You could get shingles later, but, you know, it's the same way with COVID. You know, you caught the virus, you built up the, and you know, you have the antibodies against that. And I think that's the problem that you were seeing with a lot of the younger people who were catching COVID a couple times, and actually they did very well because they're younger and they're very resilient. You know, that's why there was really not any issues with really young kids. You know, they have an amazing immunity. You know, as you age, you know, your immunity is not as well. You know, but and then to get the vaccine and then have the immunity, you know, you were seeing them having issues later down the road, and I think it was just an overload in their system that they could not deal with.
Yeah, I was watching a gastroenterologist gave some testimony. I'm sorry, I can't think of her name right now. I know what it was. Dr. Hassan. I can't remember her first name, though. She gave a testimony, and apparently the reason that children, young adults, they weren't, you know, dying from COVID, they weren't having major COVID issues, it has to do with something in your intestine that is related to your immune system. And it's something that elderly people don't have a lot of or don't have any of. And I thought that was really fascinating. And they actually knew this back in 2020, but for some reason, the study was not allowed to be released.
Well, there were a lot of things that were not allowed to be released and said, and...
Well, guess what medications were helping to add this to the intestinal tract? Hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of people that I spoke with in Florida where that was, they were able to get to that and get it, you know, reacted very well, you know, but they really did suppress that in a lot of areas. And that is really sad because it really, truly helped a lot of people. We, you know, even when we gave that at our hospital, the difference that it made such a difference for patients. So.
And I'll always question why they were never, you know, like.
Because then big pharma couldn't make their money.
I believe that. I just wish that, you know, their priority was saving people and not making money off of people. That would be great. I mean, come on. There's got to be enough money in selling vitamin D supplements, right?
Not for them. That's not big enough for them.
Right. It might not be billions, but it's millions. And, you know, to me, millions would be perfectly fine for a company. But all right. Lori, one of the issues you're going to be dealing with if you are elected to U.S. Senate is that of the wars that are going on right now with between Russia and Ukraine and Israel and the Gaza Strip. So can you tell me where you stand on these foreign policy issues?
Sure. You know, Ukraine is still one of the United States' allies, and we must support our allies and, you know, protect and defend the United States above all, though, first. And I believe that's where we really need to be, is to protect and defend the United States above all. But we do need to support our allies. I do have an issue with Ukraine right now with the amount of money that has been spent and sent to Ukraine, because we have been supporting Ukraine since 2014. You know, we have given them almost twice as much the amount of money in the last 2 years as we have since 2014. I believe it was like $32 billion. And then we've just given like almost another $30 billion since 2022.
Wow.
And I believe that we really need to look into it and see where those funds are going. Because, you know, there's so much economic concern and corruption and mismanagement of funding that we need to make sure that the wrong people aren't lining their pockets. You know, I believe that this war with Ukraine, I'm not sure where it's going and how long is it going to go and how long is the United States supposed to carry this burden upon their shoulders? You know, I think that we either need to get this war over with Ukraine to help them, or, you know, we need to step back and let them finish it, because I believe that we have sent so much money to Ukraine that we do not need to continually fund this war. With regard to Israel versus Gaza, Israel, I have always been a strong supporter of Israel. I was raised in a very Christian home. My parents have always taught me to back Israel because God has said so. That is the biggest thing. And I, you know, I have a huge faith. I have a huge faith and a huge believing. We are all God's people, and we have the responsibility beyond our individual selves to fight for our Christian beliefs. And that starts with protecting the children of Israel and blocking big government from removing religion from our society. I feel badly for the people of Gaza, but they've chose to live where they are. They were giving fair warning that they could leave. And I just, you know, I do not. Hamas, you know, I completely condemn Hamas and do not support that at all. I would like to see that war ended. I believe that we do not need to step into their political affairs and tell them how they need to vote. But we are told that we need to back with Israel, and I will always back Israel. Israel is one of America's biggest allies, so we better be taking care of them.
Yeah, we need all the support we can get in the Middle East.
yes, because they, you know, they are in the Middle East. They keep the stability there, although it's not very stable right at the moment. So, but you know, between the United States and the Middle East.
Yep. Okay. Well, I honestly don't know enough about those two pieces of international policy to really even comment, but I'm glad you The voters now know where you stand on both those issues.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
So let's wrap up the interview by talking about something that's near and dear to me, and that is the environment. And
yes,
I just look, I think everybody wants to have a green, clean planet Earth. Would you agree?
I agree. You know, and I live in Western Maryland. I'm very fortunate to live here. It's beautiful. We have, you know, the lots of trees and the streams and the lake. And, you know, I know a lot of people in the cities are not afforded that. Hopefully they can get out maybe and just take a trip to do things, you know, like that. I know it's very, very difficult now with the economic status, the way things are. But yes, regarding the Green New Deal, you know, I know we all want to make, you know, we don't want to hurt our environment. We want to all be environmentally friendly. And I know that, you know, some people on the other side talk about the electric vehicles as one of the things in their Green New Deal. And I have a problem with that, not just because of, I mean, they have their pros in that they are quieter and they're supposed to have zero emissions and fewer parts to repair and they're more energy efficient. But, you know, they also still have problems. They have limited driving range. They are affected by extreme temperatures, like where I live, because it gets very cold here. And in just the demographic landscape, like if you have hard hills to go up, you know, they are affected by that. It drains the batteries more. And speaking of the batteries for these vehicles, I don't know if anyone's ever looked into what it costs to replace these batteries, but it's almost like purchasing a new gas-powered vehicle. I mean, some of them are like $20,000, $30,000. And while these batteries recharge, they eventually degrade over time, decreasing their capacity and their range, you know, so therefore their longevity is still a concern. And replacing them, like I said, is extremely costly because they have, you know, the minerals in them that they have to mine, like lithium and nickel and cobalt. So that extraction process itself is not really environmentally friendly in itself. You know, it has a destruction of the water and the pollution and things like that that are affected.
Right. And that's before we get into the issues of childhood labor and slavery yes. possibly going on.
Right. You know, we have the petroleum products at our fingertips, and we are actually very, very reliable and depending on this more than you think. It is in far more things than you can possibly think. And it's right now that's meeting the Americans' needs through the cost, you know, and most people cannot afford the electric vehicles, you know, unless you're in a much higher economic tax bracket, you're not going to be able to buy these electric vehicles. I mean, unless they bring things way down in price. And maybe, you know, there are hybrids out there, and that could be maybe part of some of the solution. Like maybe you could run your electric vehicle for as far as it would, and then the gas would take over, you know, and that would help limit some of the emissions that there are. But I have another issue with this, they talk about a lot regarding the environment, and that's you know, they say it's the climate change that they label it as. But you know, these windmills that are up, we have them all over the place up here, you know, because we have a lot of mountainous terrains that gets, you know, get a lot of wind. But these offshore wind farms that are being installed, these windmills, they have a huge effect on our environment. Huge. I don't know that they've actually really looked into that, or maybe they just don't care. And I don't know where these environmentalists are, but they've caused, you know, habitat disruption for like birds and bats and, you know, bald eagles and things like that.
Well, I think just like with the COVID vaccine issue, I think that the people that could be looking into these issues aren't, because they don't really want to. And, you know, marine life being dead is not a good public relations topic.
Yes, they're not bringing that up. They are burying that. But, you know, you're seeing it. You're hearing about beached whales, you know, and it's because of the I believe it's because of them of installing these offshore wind farms that's disrupting the ecosystem. You know, like I said, they have a huge impact. They have an impact on the birds and their migration. You know, they're installing these, they're using like sonar to install these things, and it's making an underwater noise, which is affecting dolphins, fish, whales. It's disrupting their sonar. And it's disrupting the marine ecosystem, the water currents, the sedimentation pattern, you know, in their habitat. The cable installations are disrupting the seabed floor. And no one's addressing these issues. So these people who were talking about climate change and the Green New Deal, maybe I better think about our environment.
Do you have any thoughts on nuclear power being the alternative energy source?
Well, I mean, we were using nuclear power before.
We already are. I mean, I believe it's...
Yeah, I mean, well, they're shutting so many of those plants down.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, they are. They're trying to shut those down, the coal plants down. But that's a huge effect for where I live, you know, around here. The coal plants and the coal miners and things like that. And you're putting people out of jobs. They talk about making new jobs. Honestly, we needed to go on Trump's policy with opening up the gas pipelines and drill, baby, drill. You know, it helps with people on an economic standpoint, and it would help the United States of America because we could be selling our own fuel.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I didn't think about earlier with energy, how many people out there, you know, buy through websites like Amazon, you know, and they get things delivered to their house, you know, all that has an effect, whether you realize it or not. If you're getting quote unquote free shipping, it's going into the price of the product. So, you know, the prices of these different e-commerce websites would actually be lower, or ideally they would be lower, if it didn't cost as much money to deliver, which the cost of delivery used to be very cheap 15, 20 years ago. I used to sell a lot of things on eBay. I remember $3 priority shipping. You know, nowadays we're paying five times that amount, you know.
And you're not even getting your Amazon packages in 24 hours anymore. You know, you're not. And how many times have you just decided you were going to buy something online and then the shipping is more than your product? You know, see, these are some of the reasons why. And in essence, I feel like we have, you know, traded one problem for two, because before we only had to deal with the petroleum and its impacts on the environment and the climate. And now we have to deal with two. You know, we've created more chaos for ourselves than resolution. Instead of refining and focusing on one issue, we've resolved to the problem that, you know, we've created more than one problem.
Mm-hmm. And here's an issue that we're dealing with in southeastern Baltimore County. Is our wastewater treatment plant, I didn't know this, otherwise I would have brought it up in 2022. We've been operating at 110% capacity, and I personally believe this could be tied to our border control issue, which I know that in Baltimore County, it is a sanctuary county. The police are not allowed to report people who are in the Baltimore County jail. If their immigration status is questionable, they are not allowed to report this person to ICE. And, you know,
How many Baltimore County people are affected by this? You know, we are providing them with housing, medical. They're giving a stipend for groceries and other things. How is this fair to the hardworking people?
Right.
There, you know, it's not right.
When you go to a concert, a music concert, there is a capacity for that building. It's a fire code regulation, right?
Yeah.
Let's say Baltimore Arena, whatever it's called these days, at CFG Bank, I think. I don't know. They have, I think it's about 20,000 people capacity for that arena. Once you're past that point, you can't allow anybody else in. Otherwise, it becomes an issue if, for some reason, a fire breaks out.
Correct.
Just the same, each area has a capacity limit, whether it's the roads, the housing, the school systems, the wastewater, the power grid. And these are issues that people don't think about. And they're just like, oh, well, let's welcome everybody to the community. I'm like, you can't.
You could use a lot of analogies with that. I mean, you have a ship that holds 2,000 people and you put 4,000 people on it. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to sink.
Yep. You know? I mean, it's not, I am not a rocket scientist, but I know when the math ain't mathing. So
that's exactly right.
Is there anything else you would like for the voters of Baltimore County, specifically for my audience, but the people of Maryland? This is a statewide election, right?
Yes, it is. It is statewide, which means I have to cover the entire state of Maryland, which I did in my last election. I jumped in the race last time in 22 in May. The election was in July. I came in second out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Less than 100 days. And I was working. I am currently working as well now. I work full time still in the pre-post-op area. And I just wanted to get my website out there. So if people want to check me out, you know, it's friendinthesenate.com. Or they can email me at electofriend@gmail.com. They can find me on Facebook at Lori R. Friend, and also on Twitter or X at Lori Friend GOP. Also, you know, I just want to make sure that people realize, you know, yes, Larry Hogan is in the race. There's a lot of other candidates in the race. I want to make Marylanders aware that there's more than a choice than Larry Hogan. People keep saying, you know, we need Larry Hogan because he's the only one that can get us across the finish line. I don't want to vote for Larry Hogan, but he's the only one. That's not true. You need to find a candidate that you feel strongly about and back that candidate and get other people to look and listen to that candidate and see if they align with them. If we get enough people together to vote for someone who can make a change, which is what we want, is a change. Because if we keep electing the same people over and over, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different outcome. You're not going to have that change. You know, I'm a different kind of candidate because I'm not political. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for 27 years. I got into this political arena because of COVID, but, you know, I continued on.
Your father wasn't a congressman.
No, I don't have anyone in my family at all that I'm the first one ever, other than having people in my family that vote. That's as far as it goes. But, you know, I'm a different type of candidate. I believe I'm the only woman candidate on the Republican ticket running.
Oh, well, hold on. Let me ask you this. Did you get a significant amount of money from Mitch McConnell's buddies?
I have not received any big monies at all. I haven't even received little monies, but you know, I would very much appreciate it because it's hard to get across the state of Maryland with my own funds too, a lot. But I was saying, as a woman, I can bring a unique perspective, you know, maybe a different, like women have different life experiences than men. Nothing wrong with men.
That is true. And you're a mother.
I am a mother, yes, and you know that there's your diversity, okay. But it leads to, I believe, a well-rounded, you know, decision-making process. Having women in there as well, women make up half the population, so you know, why not? There you go. There's your equality and your diversity. I'm trying to appease to the other side as well, you know, for Democratic and independent voters. Women kind of prioritize listening and seeking, and they try to find common ground, you know, to bridge division. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I will say, first of all, good luck on your campaign.
Thank you very much. I need it. I need everybody's prayers and help along the way. I'm being the voice for the people. So don't vote for me, vote for you. Vote for the person who's going to be your voice in the Senate.
That is a great way of putting it. And I'm going to let you have the final word. This has been Adam Reuter for the Baltimore County Informer. Have the last word, Lori.
Yes. Remember me, Lori Friend, because we all need a friend in the Senate.